No thanks for Yusuf Kumanyaka. No thanks for the fire ants parading red stripes down my forearm as I radioed in grids for napalm bombs. Their flaming edges still serrate the black pajamaed shadows beyond my window in this dawn's early mist. No thanks for the blue sliver of freedom I sought, low crawling through elephant grass as bullets ticked off human flags. Between the blades of a lover's fingers, I still wake an arm's length away from Lonnie's open mouth, bobbing in that stream. No thanks for the white shrapnel stars constellated around my heart's tattered colors. There aren't enough surgeries to diffuse them from my chest's black walls, nor enough names engraved on my imploded eyes to survive me from their ghosts. Take back your phantom limbs, the severed lifelines on my mother's palm, my wife's unnamed aborted son. I never wanted their surrender. Metal these untagged body parts hurling through night patrols, these blowbacks of 4th of July fireworks ricocheting off hot LZs, my unexploded mortars waiting for a child's foot to skip by. And don't ask me for the bruise of honor shaped like an oak leaf cluster, nor the bronze star poured out of a war criminal's eye. I've offered all I'm grateful for. You cannot take what I will not kill to give.
Welcome, Ross.
Hello.
Hi. We're here in the studio with Ross Cantalupo. He's just read from his poem, from his book collection called No Thanks, and that was the title poem, No Thanks. R.G., as we know him, R.G. Cantalupo, he's been published in hundreds of literary journals through the U.S., Canada, and England, and his award-winning Vietnam War memoir, The Light Where Shadows End, was serialized in the literary journal War, Literature, and the Arts. R.G., you were awarded 3 Purple Hearts and a Bronze Star with a Combat V during your tour in 68 and 69 in the 25th Infantry Division. It's interesting because, you know, this is here you've been so recognized by the government, of which you eschew, of course, in this poem. But you're an activist, an anti-war activist, and that is something that's obviously come into your, you know, into your being, into your life since your action in Vietnam.
It was a strange sort of experience for me because what happened was I got wounded the last time I got wounded. I was not supposed to survive, and I was pretty messed up. I had shrapnel in my brain and shrapnel around my heart and severed arteries and, you know, many, many injuries. Mm-hmm. So it was so tentative in terms of my survival at that time that the Army held the telegram to my mother and my wife at that time for a week because they weren't sure if I was going to survive. So they mm-hmm. didn't send the telegram. And the process for me and how I became an activist out of this experience, it wasn't, you know, being bitter and all of that. Mm-hmm. The difference for me as a Vietnam veteran was that I spent 9.5 months in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of time to think about my experience in Vietnam and the experience of other soldiers in Vietnam. And I was happened to be in the most part of my rehabilitation, recuperation, coming back to life, was in San Diego Naval Hospital. I was an Army sergeant in a Naval Hospital surrounded by Marines. Mm-hmm. And the Marines all had these stories, and they were all bitter and angry and all of this kind of thing. And so coming out of that experience, you know, becoming an anti-war activist, joining the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and subsequently having to go underground, which relates to now the NSA and all of those kind of things, having to go underground, you know, during that period, and disappearing, basically. I ended up going to UC Santa Cruz and disappearing from Monterey, which was the chapter that I was one of the leaders in. So my experience as an activist, and to this day, I am a member of the Vietnam Veterans Against the War. I submit and am published often in the magazine, the journal that comes out from the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, The Veteran. And I've been active in that my whole life. I mean, it's just something I haven't gone away from.
Now, there's a particular incident that got you into trouble, let's say, with the FBI, under FBI surveillance. Something that probably happens, you know, the media positions itself to view, for us to view things the way they want us to view them, right? So tell me about that photograph that preceded all of that.
Well, it was kind of a strange experience. Again, one of those happenstance kinds of things. I was in a demonstration, a march, mm-hmm. I invited my friend Anthony to come, who wasn't really an activist. He was more of a pacifist. And there was a motorcycle cop who kept trying to herd us off of the street and, you know, make us disassemble. He was kicking people, and in that time there was a big crowd, and we outnumbered the police, and so happened that he fell off of his motorcycle and fell into the crowd, and we were all surrounding him, and he grabbed my friend Anthony's leg and started pulling him to try and arrest him, and then there became this tug of war with Anthony's leg in between. Well, it just so happened that the Monterey Herald was there taking photographs, and the police officer, the motorcycle cop, lost his baton, his club. It ended up in my hand.
Oh, my God.
The picture was of me going to club him with his own club. Oh, and God. That ended up on the front page of the Monterey Herald the next day.
Right. And you became enemy.
And after that, it was all over. The FBI was, wow. You know, I heard the clicks on the phone, and it was also very suspicious. They would be in unmarked cars outside of my house. And it was a very scary, intimidating experience, which I'm sure.
And here, you know, we have these the counterpoint of war, which is also, in reading these poems, one feels the continual experience of intimidation and fear just from being in the environment, the anticipation, not knowing what's going to happen to you. And then you come into civilian life, and here you are having to deal with this kind of stress, yes. You know, too, for many years. Before we leave your book, No Thanks, I'd like you to read another poem from there, just so our readers can have a little bit more of the flavor of this fantastic collection.
One of the poems that I love, and it was an experience for me to write, was the Napalm poem, because I was stationed, or the area where we operated in was Trang Bang. And Trang Bang is the very famous photo that came out a year later. It was taken by Nick Ut, and it's the Napalm girl.
Right.
And so I took that photograph.
She's running.
And she's running.
Yeah.
And it's that story. Which is, you know, I learned recently that it wasn't even the Americans who were the jets that fired the napalm. It was actually the South Vietnamese government. Mm. But that was a surprise for me. But anyway, the poem is about that experience and that photo and knowing intimately that little village called Trang Bang where the napalm came down upon her. So this is called Say You Carried. 6-8-1972, Nick Ut, AP, and that's the reference to the photo. Say you carried a camera, a Nikon maybe, and you were on a road heading towards some bill, and there were voices, sounds shimmering off the tar. A water buffalo's moans, a rooster's call, an F-16 ripping through the sky's blue flag. And out of that blue, a black seed falls, a shrill whistle from hell, a dark pod blossoming into licorice flames. And there is a girl running toward you, her clothes burned off, her flesh on fire with the sweet, licorice-smelling gasoline, her tears dry smears of char. And so you click, swallow the winged terror fluttering in your chest and click, cup her searing cry in your palms. Non quoi, non quoi, she screams, too hot, but the words don't reach where you are. Running, flagging a truck, a medic, a friend. You dig through the chaos of uncounted bodies, but you can't find a pulse. You breathe in the killing fire, but you don't die. Your face becomes proof, your heart witness, your eyes this smoke lens, these charred pages. This black silk of her skin.
If you're just tuning in, I'm host Lois P. Jones, and we're here at Poets Cafe with our wonderful guest, R.G. Cantalupo. I don't know if you were a poet before you were a soldier. You have a double degree in poetry and in nonfiction. And you studied under some of the greats, Galway Canal, Sharon Olds, Robert Haas. I mean, this is all evident in your transformative, beautiful poetry, which you know I love. I am not grateful for war, but I am grateful that there are people like you who can transform these experiences into something that's so poetically searing and deeply felt, and yet, you know, it's not the same as reading, you know, a story. It's not the same as getting the news. It comes in a different way. How did you make this marriage of poetry and soldier?
I think for me it's the process of, you know, the post-traumatic stress syndrome that a lot of combat veterans come back with. It's a way of diluting very charged emotional traumatic experiences. I think writing mm-hmm. is healing,
mm-hmm.
and I think whether you've been raped or beaten or gone to war and had war experiences, I think it's the writing itself, the process of writing, is a meditative healing process.
It's healing for the writer and the reader.
I hope that it is. I hope that it translates, and that is my hope. I think that's all of our hope.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we have to, Carolyn Forché talks about being a witness and how that affects us as a culture, as a society, and that we have to do that. That is the greatest thing we have as writers, as artists,
right.
to be witness to our culture, to our time. And if we can do that, I think we've done what is our calling
mm-hmm.
As artists. I mean, I believe that's what we need to do.
I believe that too. Our calling, really, you
yes.
know. And sometimes, like when I always think, as an aside, you know, with children, we talk about, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, and they're career oriented. But really, what is your calling? You know,
yes.
What is it that you just want to get up in the morning and do every day that just fills you with, you know, inspiration and joy and whatever? I think that's
I think the despair comes from doing so many things that we hate to do.
Yeah.
And the angst comes from our lack of having purpose and meaning and all of those things.
Right. But you're a real renegade because you've got this amazing background, but you didn't take the traditional academic route, and yet you've produced these fabulous books, and they speak for themselves. So were you, did you get your degree after you came out of the war?
Yes. I mean, I studied, you know, I would say, Lois, and you know this is sort of my feeling in general is that I've been grateful to have a lot of great teachers in my life. And I think that really, whether or not I'm part of the establishment, the fact is that I have been a part of the establishment by having great establishment teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I came out of the war and went to college. And I spent 10 years going to college. I got degrees. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went to UC Santa Cruz, and then I went to South America and studied South American poetry and Pablo Neruda and Cesar Valento.
It's all here.
You know, so yeah, I was influenced by all. Beautiful. Then I came back to UC Santa Barbara, and then I went from UC Santa Barbara to Loyola Marymount, and from Loyola Marymount to Antioch, and
right. And
you know, I ended up with three masters, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. So my transformative experience with college and that is all about, it's been a process,
mm-hmm.
and it's a learning process, and I think life is that, it is a learning process. So,
but obviously enabled you to write with such precision and lyricism. I want to move now to your next book, or the next. There's several here. Well, we're going to talk about them. The next one is from
The Art of Naming.
The Art of Naming, right?
So, as I said, with my teachers. I think there's two poems from this book, if we can get them in, and one of them is The Art of Naming, and one of my great teachers was Ed Hirsch, who taught me, we sort of come from similar backgrounds and yet very different. He's Jewish, I'm Jewish, I'm half Jewish,
mm-hmm.
But his experience was the high, more of a fluent intellectual Jewish society, Jewish culture. Mine was from the lower class, growing up with a single mother, who, uneducated, and that experience as a Jew in that culture. The poem, The Art of Naming, which is the title poem of the book for Ed Hirsch, we had a long discussion about Duende and Garcia Lorca's Duende, and Ed and I diverged. I come from the streets. He comes from a cultured, kind of aristocratic background. And this was my answer, in a sense, to the notion of duende from the streets. It starts with this, and to think we could understand the abyss by naming it. And that comes from, that echoes a poem from Cesar Vallejo called, or the to paraphrase that, if what happens if the wings of birds do not survive. I'm paraphrasing it terribly, but that's basically what it is.
Okay.
The Art of Naming, Fred Hirsch. And to think we could understand the abyss by naming it, by holding it in our palms like a winged bird, a canary, say, flapping on the murderous air. To think after gazing into the face of darkness, we could catch the darkness in a word. That in the black and white imperfect spines of these letters a body could rise, and my words reach back like arms to pull the dead from their shadows. But no, my friend, nothing brings the dead back so little as a word. Better to shriek, scream, howl, beat your fists against the earth. Better to spit at the diminishing sky or hunt the killer down with a pink lily. For when we look over the edge of nothing, an inexpressible terror steals our breath and cuts off the air to clarity. Naming it later will not capture what it was. 2. In the streets, we learn this early. The brute force of the fist or club smashes through our tongues, twists our mouths into wretched sounds, stammered groans. What starts out as a word is ripped from our lips, unformed, wild, primordial. Words torn from our chests fly out as cries. Words beaten into lies turn into fists of stone. Words pounded into shivs sever lifelines far beyond our lives. 3. Those I buried are beyond me now, have always been beyond my reach somehow. If I could call them back with words, I would. If I could had a name for the hand clutching my throat when their fingers slipped out of mine, I would have screamed it out and would be screaming still in my dreams. But what we name, we hold dominion over as if we were small gods. It's what we can't express that flares up inside us, unquenchable. The heart burning in the midnight oil. The day flickering on like a candle in our eyes. The voice sounding not for words, but for grace.
Beautiful. Thank you. I'm host Lois P. Jones, and we're on Poets Cafe with our honored guest, R.G. Cantalupo, reading from several of his works, including No Thanks and The Art of Naming. Why, this is why Lorca spent his time hanging out in, you know, in the flamenco caves.
Exactly.
You know, listening to the cries coming up through the feet of the dancers, you know,
right.
and the hollow bones of the guitar. I mean, that's where it's at. And how can we transform that? But we try.
Yes, I think we're always trying as artists to get it right, to get it.
So just briefly, if you can say, what was his, you know, what was the disagreement on his end? That
Ed believes in poetry in a different kind of way.
Okay.
That the art is enough, in a sense, to transform society. And I think
an
the
idealist.
Difference, in a sense, I mean,
it's
very literal,
yeah.
And it's very idealistic.
Mm-hmm.
And what I felt was my response to that was, in the streets, the words, it's that we have limits.
Right.
We are poets.
Mm-hmm.
We are not, and we shouldn't be more. In a sense, it's poetry or poet being a poet, meaning that you can transform the society your work in. But if you're talking about going to war with words against assault weapons and tanks and things like that, you can't do that. You can't bring a body back to life with a word. An elegy is an elegy. It's sad. It's sad because of the loss.
Mm-hmm.
We can never recover that loss through words. We just try. And I think the difference was my interpretation of Lorca's Duende,
mm-hmm.
That it was that there were limits to being, to the transformation that we could make as artists within the society itself. How much can we do?
Right.
You know, we can go to a protest march.
Mm-hmm.
We can voice our dissonance. But do we want a war? Do we want to stand there, like in Tiananmen Square, in front of the tanks? That's a different thing.
And I think, you know, we have to fight those kind of wars in a different way. You know, it's not going to come through armed resistance, and it's not going to come through. I mean, we can certainly make a stand, right, as a presence and protest, but the corporate dynamic of that
is so huge, so strong, so entrenched.
You have to get them where their IV is.
I think just holding up our banners,
mm-hmm.
and being recognized, somehow people seeing our banners is enough,
mm-hmm.
sometimes, because that transforms the next generation.
That's true.
Out of the 50s came
the 60s.
It's the
generations, yeah.
You know, out of the women's movement and the black movement, you know, that became the Vietnam movement. And there is, it's generational, and we follow those assemblies and we keep coming back,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that, I think, is, that's what we can do, and that's,
I hope that that's what we continue to do. Sometimes it's the apathy and the ignorance that allows us to just go along with whatever the corporate military structure wants to do.
Right.
And I think we have an obligation and a responsibility not to allow that.
That's right. Because, you know, the more there's an apathy, the more they'll be able to accomplish their means.
Yeah, and exactly.
So another poem from this book, which has a particular meaning for you, somebody who has been, your body has gone through so many punishments in the war and then in life. I don't know, you always have so many things going. I mean, you're writing, you have also a theater in Santa Monica, and that heart takes on a lot, the heart of yours.
Yes.
Tell me about this poem.
The poem is called Assisting, and I wrote it dedicated to Alice Pirro. I had had a heart attack, and I was in the hospital in Bakersfield after a triple bypass surgery. All of that is a surprise when you have a major illness, and then you go into hibernation for 5 hours where you're in a different place. Everything stops. You come back to life. And this is a poem about coming back to life. Alice came to my bedside and with her hands healed me. And it's the intention. It's the prayers. And that's what this poem is about. It's called Assisting for Alice Pirro. Your hands light, graceful as doves atop the wire sutures where surgeons cut through bone. Warmth radiates through the cloth, spirits me into early afternoon sun. The once constant ache fades and dies. This is how the heart conjures wings, flutters, and longs to fly free from its ribbed cage. With a simple touch, a palm over the fissure where my two chambers quaked and cracked. This is how I wake after so many false, immortal years. Was there a sign I missed to arrive in this bare white room mid nowhere? Was there a word I lost, a talisman, a conch from Canarsie that called out sea? A redwood cone for seeding a home I squandered. Home, somehow during my five-hour journey through the whirring dark, I'd forgotten where that was. I neither remember the street, the number, nor if anyone else lived there, but your hands don't ask such questions. They lie still on the sheet, as if it were a shroud. I close my eyes. Hear my breath rise and fall beneath your palms, a beat from a past life I live, not knowing who I was. This is how we mend. This is how we bear. This is how we love. A sound rages in my throat, a voice. If I could decipher it, I would. If I could offer it up as blessing, I would. If I could rise as your hands lift away, I would. I'd name them angels' wings, and I would fly.
And so we do. Beautiful. Thank you. I'm Lois P. Jones, and my guest has been R.G. Cantalupo. Look for the Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on KPFK, Pacifica Radio, for all of Southern California and beyond.